Hello, my friends, and welcome back to Bardic Babble, the show where we talk to creators about the things that they create. Joining me on today's episode is Travis Vengroff, half of the production duo over at Fool & Scholar Productions. They're known for some of the best audio dramas in the business right now, such as The White Vault, Dark Dice Pod, and Don't Mind Cruxmon. If you haven't listened to any of these, please take a minute, go check them out, go dive into some of their works, and then come back. And when you get back, please consider leaving a rating and review here on Bardic Babble. And while you're in there, maybe even let us know a couple creators you might want us to interview, and we'll see what we can do. That's all. That's the updates. Thank you so much. Let's run an ad real quick and then dive into it with Travis. Alrighty, friends, welcome back to Bardic Babble, the show where we talk to creators about the things that they create. And joining me today is the producer of one of my personal favorite podcasts, The White Vault. I have Travis Vengroff joining me today. How are you doing today, Travis?
Hello, hello. I'm doing pretty good. It's a fun day and good to be here.
Awesome. Happy to have you. So I'm just going to kick straight into it. I actually 100% did not expect you to jump on. I know you guys are wrapping up White Vault, moving into Don't Mind Cruxmon and running the awards gamut right now. So thank you for taking the time to pop on and hang out, talk podcasts.
Absolutely. And it's a lot of fun. And just for clarity's sake, Cruxmon, Don't Mind Cruxmon, if you're so Cruxmon. Inclined.
Let's introduce yourself. How'd you get into podcasting?
Okay. To clarify, I'm the sound designer, producer, editor. I do kind of like everything that's not writing the story for all the shows that we make for the most part. I was a musician. I played accordion in a rock band. Still kind of do, but it's an internet band now, and I just record covers whenever I feel like it from video games. I have a background in audio editing and wanted to hang out with my then girlfriend, now wife, and share a hobby. That was something creative. And D&D is very fun, but for just the two of us to do something, what could we do? We were thinking maybe we'd make a video game or start a podcast that was like a fiction podcast, like telling stories, because we like telling stories. It's something that we both love, stories. So we tried the video game programming thing for a little while, and it was not very easy. We spent a day and got to Hello World, and then we spent a day on the podcasting writing thing, and we had like the outline of a story in the first episode partly written. So we kind of fell into podcasting by accident, intentionally, but we were doing it for fun, and it got bigger and bigger. We started with a small network, and we, within the first month, became larger than the largest show in the network, and the next month became larger than all the shows in the network, and then just kind of kept growing from there. A year later, we released The White Vault, and that was much bigger than our previous show, and we just haven't stopped and love what we do, and somehow eventually became professional enough to say, to heck with our jobs, we're making more money doing podcasting, which is to say more than minimum wage in states that don't have minimum wage.
So you are up to 5 shows?
I think you're right. If you don't include miniseries, sure. Yeah.
How is it balancing personal life and 5 long-running shows?
We do it seasonally, so it's a little bit easier. So we just think in terms of like, all right, if I could just get through this season, it'll be okay. At times, but it really is a juggling act. So it's what I love doing. It's my passion, but it is also a hobby. It's still something I enjoy doing. So light work-life balance does not necessarily exist at all times. I just worked like a 48-hour week without sleep and just kind of powered through it because it's what had to be done to get the episode out on time. And we've got a reputation to uphold. Most times, though, it's not that hectic and I don't have to do ridiculous things like that, but it's the balance of life and work get blurred, and I'm still trying to master that element of things. But unloading certain responsibilities and hiring on people for some freelance work has really been very effective at allowing me to get back evenings and weekends to some degree.
That's awesome. So each one of your shows has a very, very unique feel and a very unique approach. Do you ever find it difficult going from The White Vault to Dark Dice to Don't Mind? Do you ever find it weird? I know you know it seasonally, but you're probably always thinking about every show at some kind of level. Is it hard to change gears? And
yeah, I'd say it is a little bit weird. Thankfully, I don't have to write them, which is I'm very fortunate on that end. So I just can jump one into the other, to the next. And I'm a bit ADHD, so I can actually go in between different shows fairly quickly without too much thought, but they all have different types of soundscape, different ways of being foleyed. The cell phones in each one of them sound completely different. When I do jump back into a story, I take a minute to try and remember a few of the things that I've been doing, but I work in a single timeline in my digital audio workstation. To put it easily, most people put an episode in a single session or a song in a single session, and they open up the next song, they open up the next story, the next season, the next episode. I have all of Dark Dice in one session. So like 17 hours of just stuff.
Wow.
All of the White Vault in one session, all five seasons. So it's very easy for me to say, what did I do here? Oh, that's exactly what I did here. Let me replicate that, but better, because I'm smarter now and I can do a little bit more because I've learned some things. So let's make this a little creepier. Let's make this a little better. Maybe instead of using dog toenails across a wooden floor, we'll combine that with like some heavy padded sounds so you can have more scary footsteps, you know, all the different things that you build on top of.
That's incredible. So, just if you had to export, we'll just say Dark Dice today, how big of a file do you think that would be? 17 hours.
Pretty big. Depends on the quality. There are many things. Is it a wave? Is it MP3?
Totally.
But I think about an hour or 30 minutes of stuff is usually 12 gig, depending on the number of stems or individual tracks that are being used. You're probably looking at about 17 to up to 40 gig per half hour to 45 minutes on an episode of what we release in pieces. And then it gets combined into a single compressed MP3 mixed and mastered down to like 50 megabytes or less.
That's incredible. And then do you record all of your own Foley or do you hunt some of it down on the internet?
I record myself almost exclusively. I do use a lot of sound effects from the internet using freesound.org, which is a great resource for people to start with. I use sound packs from Sonus that I purchase occasionally or other websites. Podcastmusic.com is the one. There are various places that other people can use, but I do a lot of in-house recording and I also go through great lengths to get a lot of authentic sounds that are homebrew. I've gone through mines, fjords. Most recently, I just went on a car ride with a friend just to get some car sounds for the first episode of Don't Mind Cruxmont to sound really extra real.
That's awesome. What do you record all of your, like when you go on a car ride and stuff, do you have a specific device or recording setup?
I do. It's elsewhere. It's an H8 Zoom. I started from the H4, went up to an H6, now I'm at an H8, just because I've been lucky enough to be doing this for as long as I have been. The quality has gone up noticeably with each release. I think the H8 is really awesome. It's got a lot of really fun features. It is worth it, but the H4 will get the job done and sound remarkable as well. Yeah, I love authentic sound and being able to take something portable with me at a better quality than a cell phone microphone really makes a big difference. And you can sort of hear the stereo or, you know, you get the experience that you're actually there. You can feel it.
Gotcha. So now when you are doing Foley, like walk us through that process. What does it look like? You need, footsteps through a forest. Where do you just like head straight out to a forest? Do you piece it apart? Like how do you tackle?
They require a few different pieces, components that come together. So people walking through a forest. Okay, got it. Yep. I could walk through a forest. That's easy. But the problem is if I'm walking actually outside in a forest, I've got the problem of wind. Wind is you will hear the wind hitting the microphone as a sound, and it will sound inauthentic unless this is a found footage story, which makes it very easy. I love found footage for that reason, but we're not doing any more. So I will usually use a program called Edward Ultimate. It is a pre-recorded footsteps at variable lengths and intensities, and I can literally type it out with my keyboard in MIDI, like a keyboard, like you're playing a musical instrument. And it's using recordings of real footsteps at various velocities, varied. You can pick the shoe type. You can pick the terrain type. Are they stepping over for a brief second some gravel? Okay, I could put that in there. And then I do the clothing manually by brushing my shoulder, various jackets that I have. Sometimes I put belts over my shoulder and like walk a little bit while I'm doing the brushing sounds. If they're holding particular items, papers and such, I will always, of course, have those on me. Or Graham Kasner in one season has a bottle of water with him because he would, of course, if you're going to the Ark, it's cold and you get thirsty. So all the various things you think moving with people as they go on their journey through the woods or wherever they're going, you want to add. And then, by the way, what woods are they? So I'll track down authentic recordings of the animals that should be in those woods based on the regions Caitlin usually sets for me. If it's China, it's a very different set of birds than the ones you'll find in Canada, than the ones you'll find in the woods of Svalbard, because there are no forests in Svalbard.
Have you ever run into the, you make a sound on, we'll say, you know, day one, but then on day 60 something, you find a better way to make that sound or replicate it? Has that ever happened to you yet?
I've gotten better at Foley in general, like the little brush sounds, the movement sounds. I've gotten really refined at that because I do that throughout almost every second of every show. So you feel the emotional weight of the tension when the characters are shifting in their seat uncomfortably, because that is quite fun. Other recording things, really, it's just been a matter of me getting better at not getting the wind when I do out in the field recording footsteps. My move was to go digital and skip the process of recording it manually. That's looked down upon by Foley artists, but it's just something that I need to save for time because I'm producing 30 minutes of content every week and a half or less, finished content, which is just a lot. I think dialogue editing, I've found some ways to speed through dialogue editing and make takes go by faster for me by having basically three tracks of the same person, muting two of them, and then adding extra space above and below so I can just move the tracks up and down so I'm only listening to one at a time, and I can kind of quickly jump between whatever one I want and cut the different pieces together. So those are like the things that I normally run through very quickly that I've gotten a lot faster at, but it's the boring minutia, I would say, not the really cool stuff. But I will say a lot of the cool sounds we think of, like getting slapped or punching someone, those sounds sound really terrible, and you should probably use stock recordings or look up the ways that the professionals actually record them instead of just actually hitting someone, because it sounds very weak.
Gotcha. So now a large portion of my audience is D&D or D&D adjacent, so I kind of want to start peeling back the layers of Dark Dice. Fascinating, fascinating show. For those at home, can you kind of just give us like a little brief synopsis of the show?
Dark Dice is an actual play where I'm the DM and I am going to take six adventurers through horror hell. a delightful experience where one of them is a doppelganger and is slowly killing the others off, but I'm misdirecting them, misguiding them. I'm an unreliable narrator because we have unreliable characters. They're getting weaker as the journey goes on, gaining levels of exhaustion, not gaining actual levels. They're getting slowly drained as they reach their final destination to rescue the town's missing children. So it's a lot of misdirection, a lot of getting into some deeper issues. Mental health being a very serious one that we care about and don't want to make light of in any way. And we're trying to have an immersive experience, cutting out the dice rolls to a large degree so it feels more like you're in the woods with these people getting tracked down and murdered and just as confused as they. That's really my goal. So if you encounter an NPC, we'll swap it out with a voice actor. When they get into combat, I kind of summarize what happened. You hear what they want to do. And then when they describe what happens, I'll re-describe it a bit more dramatically and you'll hear screaming and explosions and such.
Very cool. So DMing a game of Dungeons & Dragons is already a monumental feat unto itself. And then you also go through and you produce the show. What are some of the online tools that you use, whether it's map generators or NPC generators? What do you use to kind of help mitigate the stress of being a DM and producing the show?
I use something called Confluence. It is a Wikipedia, basically, for me. No one else really has access to it. And I can cross-reference things. And all of my ideas I can build and click through and hyperlink them to other items and action items. And as long as I stay organized like a Wikipedia, it is my own private personal wiki that I can consistently and perpetually add to. That has been a very, very invaluable tool for me as someone who is not a visual person. And as our podcast isn't visual, I haven't used visual aid on the show, which I would if it was a home game. I love those things. I love handouts. I love drawing maps. I love miniatures and painting them and terrain. But because we're an audio medium, I've very intentionally avoided those things. And I use handouts for the players. Like, I'll pre-write up a description of an area. And when the first person gets there, I'll say, would you mind reading this? So the players will describe the area instead of me in a bit more of a dramatic way. If they come across a book, I'll give them some way to describe the book that they've found. If it's like a journal they're trying to find or something.
So I literally just got like goosebumps because every writing class I've ever taken always harps on the show don't tell. And in D&D, I always think that gets mistranslated, especially in this new age D&D where collaborative storytelling is kind of the center of the entire thing. So I'm going to co-op and steal the when you walk into an area, this is what you see. So instead of me reading it, I'm gonna have my players start doing it. That's brilliant. That is. And it's interesting when you take away one of the senses, the things that you have to come up with to be creative and be descriptive in the storytelling.
Absolutely. And one of my favorite things about the experience is you can give players like a thing like, you know, read this out loud. Oh man, this place smells awful. What do you guys smell that? What is that? Oh, I think it's sulfur. You know, you can kind of get into a little bit of a, like the characters themselves will bring the scene to life. And then I can just add to it like, okay, you guys noticed this thing too, or, you know.
No, totally.
But I've using the players as the tool to introduce things has been one of the strongest. It's not a digital online tool, but they're online and we're using Zoom and I can, you know, steal their voices for that purpose.
Very cool. So when you guys are recording that, yeah, it's not a home game, so it doesn't have the same flow and pacing. Do you ever like pause, hey, let's redo this scene, you know, start from the top kind of a thing? Or do you try to make it feel improv and organic as possible?
It is improv and it is organic. We don't stop and re-record things. We do have the ability if like something is uncomfortable, but we haven't actually gotten to a point where the players have said, I need to stop, which is weird because we've gotten some disgusting places, but we have not got there. And perhaps because of, I used online tools to figure out what they would actually not want to be in the story and avoided those things ahead of time. I highly recommend those various tools that are available for DMs as well to gauge what your players are interested in.
What other strengths have you found like taking away just all of the visuals and working specifically with audio? Like how has that improved your DMing?
It's actually made it a lot easier. I am a non-visual person. I don't have a mind's eye. I can't see things in my head. So thinking out these descriptions ahead of time, writing them down, giving them to the players to sort of elaborate on and make their own, it makes for creativity. It also allows you to set up a situation and change it slightly if you want to. If you, the DM, want to, or the players find something you hadn't envisioned or think of an idea that's better than yours, like, oh, that's right. Yes, we're going with that. That's the way it was and always will be. And in our sort of strange production, we don't go back and re-record things, but we do an awful lot of additional recording to go on top of it or in the background of it. I add a soundtrack on top that I've been recording and painstakingly been bringing to life. Lots of creepy monster sounds, things of that nature. But like if the character stubs their toe, we will sometimes stop and be like, can you please just give me a sound of your character stubbing their toe? That is a difference that we do as a, air quotes, theatrical podcast, one that's for entertainment of others. But otherwise, it's very much like a home game, except the players themselves are not the ones who are supposed to have the fun as much as it is important to tell a good story. We want to tell the best story possible. If it means killing people off, that's fine. We're okay with player deaths. We're okay with saying goodbye to characters or there are, but above all else, we want to tell a good story. And having that as the goal, as opposed to let's come together to have a good time, is a bit different because the mindset of you're going to a haunted house to get scared, your character may not come out of this, but let's make them as memorable as they can be.
No, I love that. Now, when it comes to the cast, just kind of the cast across all of your shows, but you know, very specifically with Dark Dice, how did you select the cast for the show?
So season one was the cast of The White Vault, season one, minus Rosa because she's got a job. she was busy. But everybody else is just the cast. We wanted to do a D&D game before we were going to come together to do a live show because we had never met each other and I wanted to make sure they weren't jerks and that I wasn't. So we all got together with the writer as well, who's Caitlin Statz, my wife, and we wanted to play a game of D&D. We said it'd be like a weekend. It wound up being two weekends. And that became the entire first season. We recorded like this big bulk of stuff. We were thinking it was just going to be a bonus episode, but it wound up kind of becoming its own thing because it was a little bit too fun to play with. So then at later seasons, because we have a second season that we're working on or releasing now, but we recorded a while ago, we had an idea. And it was a silly idea. First, we expanded our cast a bit to just people we knew and liked and, you know, we have this podcast that's not really a podcast. We are releasing a D&D game that was supposed to be a bonus episode that's actually a podcast. Do you want to be part of it? Okay. And like the first episode of Dark Dice had just come out. The people of the second season were kind of getting involved. And that was like Sean Howard, who we love and know from the Fable and Folly Network, who's done a bunch of really great fantasy podcasts. It's Russ from Dungeons and Dragons. Hall is a close friend of Volley, who does The Lucky Die and who's the voice of Rowena on our show. So it's a bunch of like people we know and various individuals that we really love working with. Moving on, I had this really silly idea because there's a pillow where I play D&D in real life in Portland at my friend's house when we lived there in Portland, of Jeff Goldblum. And I'm like, yeah, like he's been with us the entire time. We've played our homebrew D&D game at home that's not recorded or anything. I'm like, you know, it'd be really fun to play with Jeff. I wonder what that would be like. So I sent a message out, and it was a really nice proposal, I will clarify. It wasn't just like a sliding into DMs drunk, hey, how are you doing? This was like,
right.
I had art done, I had a character sheet, and it was very well outlined. Like, here's the exact commitment that you would need, this, yada, yada, yada. And no one said no. So Jeff Goldblum joined our show. So that was a bit of a surprise. And then suddenly people thought we were mainstream Hollywood. And like, no, I'm recording in my mother-in-law's sewing closet. We're still small. We just got lucky and have a friend who wants to play with us, who you might have heard of.
That's incredible. From, this might be a bonus episode, to having Jeff Goldblum on there. That is quite the journey. That's cool though. How was it working with him?
It was really fun. Jeff's a great guy. We've done a lot of musical things. He's a very musical person. And I think that's partly what attracted him to what we do, because we have an original soundtrack that I'm particularly proud of, with live fantasy instruments and stuff and an orchestra and choir. But working with Jeff, we had like a tech issue, like a tablet died or something. And I was like, well, I could record some silly elvish parlor tunes. So we have a moment where he's just humming to himself and it, you know, totally to himself, and it's fun. And then afterward, we turned it into like a song, like a real song. So like these little things, these snippets of gold that he just sort of exudes just by being in a room, because he's so very fun. And he brings the exuberance you see on The World According to Jeff Goldblum. Like, that's really him. He's like that all the time. And he was very happy to meet us, which was confusing. Like, what? So like we're doing a Kickstarter soon for minis for our characters for seasons 1 and 2. And one of them's of him and his character. So like, he's like, could I get a copy of that? Like, yeah, of course, Jeff. We'll mail you one.
Yes, okay. Of course. I will mint it in gold. Yes.
We'll even paint it for you. So.
Right. No, that's awesome. How did the rest of the group respond when you're like, oh yeah, by the way, you know, we're adding an A-list actor to the show for a little while?
They didn't believe me for a while. They did not believe me at all. It was quite funny. And then once they understood that I was actually serious and that it might happen, we were like cone of silence for a year. So we couldn't talk about this very exciting thing that we'd recorded for a very long time. And then once we finally got the green light to announce it, which was 2 weeks before the episode released, surprise, they were really enthused, and we weren't sure what we could and couldn't say until after the episode came out. They had a blast, and they're still surprised and baffled that it's kind of happened. And like, oh yeah, that's sort of casual now. You know, we were mentioned in like an article that came out yesterday about Jeff being awesome doing Jeff. They're like, yeah, he's also working. He also recently came out on an episode of Dark Dice. Cool.
That's awesome. That's super cool. So now when it comes to, so you and your wife, you're the dynamic duo, the split halves of it all. When it comes to Dark Dice, how much of the writing does she help with you being the DM on that?
All the writing for everything except Dark Dice. She wrote the intro episode, like we recorded it, but then she re-recorded like my lines. She made them better and more dramatic because it was very, again, it wasn't intended to be a show or a podcast. It was just having fun. And then like a little bit dark. So she rewrote my lines to be third person or past tense. That was the big change here. So everything's past tense now. So I had to re-record the entire first season in past tense, but basically the same intonation. But she gave me a lot of the descriptors. She still occasionally like, can you give me a really gross descriptor of this? And she's like, okay. So she'll give me like a paragraph or something here and there. Every couple of episodes, she helps me out in a big way. Our next major story, though, is co-authored by us for season 3. Whenever season 3 comes out, that'll be Shores of the Silver Thrum by K.A. Statz and Travis Vengraff.
Very cool. How is it working with your partner just across the board on all these projects?
It is a fantastic, wonderful experience. It's also a bit of a curse because we have a tendency to be workaholics, and separating work and life can be tough. We've gotten a bit better at it over the years, but we're still quite terrible. We love what we do, And I really enjoy working with her, which is fortunate. And we share a very similar mindset. We consume a lot of the same media. So when she says, I want it to be like this, I usually understand and can get it kind of right or pretty close to right. And then sometimes I'll just have to say, like, this is the situation. I know you wanted this and specified this in the script. It was unrealistic and we had to do this. And this is the best sound. And she'll go, okay. So over the years, we've developed a language and a means of working together that's been very productive and proactive and supportive of one another and understanding, and just so much trust has been in our relationship as a direct result. I will say the business side, the division of labor of what we do, her taking on a lot of the social media, me handling a lot of the business admin and production, is strange. And then occasionally one of us will be out of the loop on something. So we'll like regularly have to, oh, by the way, did I mention this? No, you didn't mention this. This is big news. It's very important. What? So, but for the most part, we've been very good about it. And it's a lot of fun. And I would recommend it to people who enjoy working with their spouses. And if not, I could say maybe don't do it if you're at risk. But we've done so much together now, and I can't imagine not working with her.
You mentioned you guys created kind of your own language communication style to, you know, keep each other up to date on these kind of things. When you were first starting out on these projects and starting to coalesce everything together, did you ever get to, you know, a couple of growing pains or miscommunications that just made it a little more tense or difficult than you expected?
I would say our biggest points of contention were our trying to write the first season together. It was really tough. She's very much a better writer than me. Like, I say that with a straight face and honesty. She's a good writer. She's a much better writer than I am. Her ideas are gold. I'll occasionally contribute some kernels, some pieces that make up a good idea, and we'll collaborate and mesh our minds together and come up with ideas. But I'm a much better editor than I am a writer. And I had to stop writing by like episode 3 of our first show and just give that off to her and say, like, you know, I'll handle the production and editing. I love putting things together and I like what you're writing. Working on like the Dark Dice stuff, since I wrote the whole thing for the first season and the second season, we were thinking we were going to end it and just stop doing it all together. But then Jeff said yes, and we were a little bit confused. And then also the season, you know, the first season was being fairly well beloved, and we didn't want to stop it because it would be unfair to end that story prematurely. But we've come to terms with that, and Caitlin is helping me with the next story. And true to form, her ideas are going to reshape how people experience TTRPG podcasts. In my opinion, it is so different, and I cannot wait to share it in like 2 years after we play the game and record it and do all the stuff. The music's done.
Right. That's cool. That's cool. I might have to offline ask for some insight onto that. I really enjoy your guys' work. I do. You guys do, especially when it comes to Dark Dice. Like, there's nothing else in the space that even comes close to what you guys do and the labor that you put into it and the love you put into it.
We traveled to Budapest to record a choir in Icelandic and Infernal and German, and there's another language, Elvish. We did not Neo-Kenya, we did Quenya, the actual Tolkien Elvish.
That's so cool. No, that's so cool. And outside of Dark Dice, are you guys looking to do any other D&D aligned projects in the future? You don't have to give any spoilers or anything, just thought.
We're both co-DMing a D&D in a castle in September. That'll be fun. We're doing one of those in England, because that's rather fun. And again, it'll be probably that story, like being like beta tested or something. So that'll be cool. But outside of that, we don't do any other TTRPG stuff because it is very time consuming and it is so much work. We did Liberty Vigilance, and that was an exercise in work because so much goes into transcribing, editing. There are just three extra layers when it's improvised to getting it polished enough. Whereas if you just started with the perfect recording and editing those, it would be much faster. And you've already got the scripts. I'll also add one small thing here too. Wayne June swapped out my voice as the DM for that show. Like, I actually had all my lines transcribed by myself. And then we had Wayne June, the voice of Darkest Dungeon, or Lovecraft books, various ones that I really loved from childhood, read my parts because I was really self-conscious about not liking my voice for the longest time. So I guess I just want to bring up that people do get more comfortable with their voice over time, or maybe they don't, but we just keep going.
Totally. Okay, so I'm going to ask you, I don't know, I always find it to be kind of a loaded question, but what is your favorite show to work on or to have worked on?
Show to work on or to have worked on. Thinking. Couple. I really love the world of Vast Horizon. It's also a special circle of hell for me because there are so many pieces to it. But it's Vast Horizon is a sci-fi that Caitlin wrote. It's one woman on a spaceship trying to survive, and then until it's not. And then it's a very space opera with dozens of characters speaking different languages and aliens with multiple vocal cords. And like the sheer amount of work that goes into that show in love, because I want you to feel like you're in the shoes of Nolira, the main character, as everything is happening around her in a rather terrible way. That's just so fun and so intense. So from a sound design perspective, that is my best work. It is my favorite work. I also like Dark Dice because there's no script and I can get as strange as I'd like to. We had a little intro we added to our most recent episode, which was for April. We're actually going to cut the entire episode, but then I realized it was going to be in April and I was like, oh, it's sort of funny. So it could be an April Fool's episode. Well, what if I got a sponsor? And then what if that sponsor was interrupted us every 5 seconds? So like out of nowhere, all of a sudden, there's just a bunch of bed references in the entire thing because I thought it would be silly. And it's a bit of creativity that I don't normally get to sneak into things, because things working in the scripted space. And I kind of like that about Dark Dice, that I can just say, you know what, let's try this. And sometimes it works and sometimes it will work later.
So now just on just kind of like an over bird's eye view of the whole thing, which show, we'll just go per a half hour, takes the most to edit? Because I assume like 1 minute of editing is actually closer to like 10 minutes or an hour, depending on the show. But which one would be the highest labor hours?
Highest labor hours is easily Vast Horizon. I have to go through and sing under every alien's voice. Every time an alien says a single syllable, I'm singing under it, or someone else is singing under it. So, because they've got multiple vocal cords. So this race is called the Trenin. So they'll say like, ah, hello, it is good to see you. And then there's a second layer of that voice, slightly lower, more gravelly, going,
hello, good to see you.
And then underneath that, someone is singing.
Mm-hmm.
That is one voice, one character. Next, we have AI. Every time there's an AI voice, and that is one of the main characters, is an AI voice. She's coming from a speaker. And usually the characters are moving. So I have to create 20 different speakers or something, but realistically closer to 7 in a scene where you have the voice pinging left and right from different devices. Sometimes it'll be on a watch. They walk into an elevator. It's now the elevator speakers. So coming up with all the different perspectives from this voice to appear, the voice of God, the ship's AI, to interact with us in a way that feels like it's not a person. And I also have to cut out every breath. So anytime she breathes, it must disappear. If a word is repeated from a previous episode or a phrase, I have to copy and paste it and swap out that take from the same episode. So every time she says the same phrase, it's the same take. There are numerous filters and stuff. That's just the voices. And then you have to Foley it really well because you feel like you're in the room with the character. And she's got a, like, very intense things are happening all the time and you want to be able to feel her exhaustion. So I would say Vast Horizon is the, again, the most intense of our shows. Second to it would be The White Vault, just because there are multiple characters and it is a lot of action going on, especially in the later seasons. And then Dark Dice can also be quite intense, not because I'm putting too much into it, but largely because there is a recording, there are retakes, and I'm swapping in NPC voices and trying to edit and make it shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter so that it is a seamless, enjoyable experience that people aren't saying, man, I wasted a whole hour and nothing happened.
Gotcha. For all of our listeners at home that might have their own actual play podcast or considering an actual play podcast or even just podcasting in general, if you had to give one or two just like overreaching tips, what would you give?
Always be working on your podcast. Like if you have the time to do it, don't think about doing it, just do it. And then as you start working on it, you will get better. And the first one may not be good, and that's okay. The RSS feed, the RSS, which is how podcasts are distributed, can always go back and be edited. You can change things. It doesn't matter. What you put out is not permanent. It is semi-permanent, and you can change it at any time that you feel like changing the thing. If you keep making things, you will get better, and eventually you'll be happy with what you're making. And you can potentially go back and remake things better if you still feel that way, or you can go on to new stories. That's the beauty of creating, is that you can create new ideas or continue making the same ones that you like making, whatever makes you happy. Secondarily, I would say don't let gear be a inhibitor for you. You can do a lot of fancy things with freeware, as long as it is not destructive freeware. Destructive audio editing is what I'm specifically referring to in this instance, but you can get a lot done with a pawn shop microphone and some milk cartons or a duvet to hide under to make your voice sound 1,000 times better. And it replicates the sound of a $50 an hour studio in New York City, or it could even be better in some instances.
Totally. Awesome. So that's really all the questions I have. This has been a wonderful conversation. Again, I'm a huge fan of your work and I can't wait. I've got 2 episodes of The White Vault left. I kind of save them so I can binge them. And I'm also kind of sad. I don't want to go and finish the series. We're kind of in a conundrum, but thank you so much for taking the time coming on and, you know, talking about podcasts and everything that you do.
And if I could add one last thing at the end real quick. So sorry. Should you be interested, we also have a new English mystery podcast called Don't Mind Cruxmont, starring Adjoa Ando from Bridgerton, and also Daniel Demarin, who's actually just a friend of ours from Florida, who's quite good. But it's a mystery about finding a cure to basically Alzheimer's, and also finding someone's missing brother. And all things point to the small, sleepy village of Cruxmont, a village of secrets. Dun dun dun.
I love it. I'm very excited because, like, again, it's bittersweet ending The White Vault, but I'm very excited to have I get like an hour a week where I can actually just like get out and go listen to podcasts on a walk that I take with my dogs.
Oh, do you know that we're doing a new spinoff series at some point in October?
No.
Yeah.
No, I was not aware.
So The White Vault is definitely ending. Like, The White Vault is over.
Right.
That story is beginning, middle, and end. Graham and the documentarian, their stories. We are working on some new stuff in the same universe. I can't really say too much more, except that it's
sure.
Not particularly related to any of the older stuff, but we are telling more stories in that world. We're also working on a mini series. We're basically entirely funded through Patreon because people are generous and it's awesome and that's how we live life. And we get to create because of it. So every year we release a mini series. This year's will be in the White Vault universe and we are working on it. The scripts are almost done and I can almost get producing on it. I'm super excited.
That excites me. I love the universe. I have adapted season 1 into 10 Candles. It's a TTRPG rule set. So I adapted that for my home group and they absolutely loved it. So it's ingrained in my creative processes now. So before we sign off and I start doing all the links and everything like that, I also wanted to just give you guys an honorable mention for pretty much clearing out the Audioverse wards. Like, incredible. Practically clean swept the show across multiple boards. So congrats on that, you guys.
Thank you.
You guys have something special here.
I feel honored, but also like, oh, what have I done? What have we done? Because there other creators are great out there as well. But we work so dang hard every day. And I'm particularly glad that we got to celebrate some of our first time actors who got awards for The White Vault Avrum, which is actually a story about 1600s in Ukraine during a very tough time that was taking place. But these actors who were the lead actress for Rivka had never acted before. And she won an Audioverse Award. She was the translator. And I was actually like, you know, would you mind trying out for this part? You speak 5 languages. You're from the area. You've got the right accent. You've lived there. Could you just try maybe recording on something? And she was amazing. And got an Audioverse Award.
Huh.
So like, that's her career just sort of jumpstarted. And she's quite excited about it. And the other 2 actors who won as well, they're a bit better known. They're out of New York, but they are basically the Yiddish theater troupe out of Brooklyn. And they're very glad to be winning awards for Jewish voice actors. It's quite nice on a story about a Jewish boy in Ukraine.
That's cool. Very cool. I hope you win many more awards in the future. So let's do some sign-offs. Where can we find your shows? And let's wrap her up. Thanks again for joining me today.
Absolutely. You can find everything we make at foolandscholar, that's an A-N-D, .com. That's where you'll find everything we make. We also make Dark Dice, darkdice.com. You can find Don't Mind, don'tmindpodcast.com. Yes, don'tmindpodcast.com. You can find Vast Horizon at vasthorizonpodcast.com and The White Vault at thewhitevault.com. I think that's all of them. No, and Liberty at libertyendures.com. May the Archon watch over you.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of Bardic Babble. Bardic Babble is a part of the Bard Podcast Network's family of shows. You can find Bardic Babble and all of our other shows at thebardpodcast.com. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe for updates on new episodes. We can't wait to share the next story with you.